Hey guys, what's going on? Welcome back. We are back for part three of the AfterBuzz TV After Show for Cobra Kai. Yeah! We are so excited. We are so pumped up to keep talking to you guys. Quiet! All right, we're going to see you guys in just 1 second for part three.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
Oh, yeah. I still feel like the best. Three parts deep, guys.
Yeah, we got the lights going and everything. Yeah.
There you go.
Wow.
Yeah. It's good.
Greatest series in history.
In history.
In history.
Just cancel the Emmys.
He said it.
Give it all the awards.
Yeah.
Give it all the awards.
Every one of them.
Yeah, exactly. He's going
to
win.
Oh, and you know what? You're right. Rick, you're right. You said it earlier. Rick Hahn sitting next to me. Kevin Undergaro is my name. And, of course, Veronica, rookie to the dojo.
Hey, hey.
I'm sorry to step on you, Ben. But I know, but Rick, you had said earlier, I think the Emmys would be too snobby to consider this
for
anything.
Yeah, right. That's what I'm saying. It's not that, I mean, I would love it. I would love to see that type of Emmy awards, to see William Zabka win off of a YouTube Red series or get nominated.
Yeah.
But it's the... Yeah, the snobs.
It'd be one of those. It'd be like one of those things, those asterisks in Emmy history. Like, oh, that was the year that the YouTube Red series won the Emmy. You know what I mean? Like, those things happen. Those things happen. So, guys, we are here. We are talking Cobra Kai. It is part three of our full rundown of the series. You can find part one and part two right now available on YouTube, or you can listen to them if you're hearing this on audio. We have a wonderful panel, as Kevin mentioned, and I can't freaking wait to talk about everything that's happening in the series because it's really cresting. It's getting to an exciting part at this point. As we get into the third part of our review here, my goodness, I finally now in this last bit start to root for Daniel just a little bit. I was so against
him.
Really? Yeah.
You weren't rooting for him from the beginning?
I've been rooting for Johnny since day one. Daniel,
he's Johnny guy.
Daniel was a villain in my opinion. It was only after the grave scene that I started to be like, okay, now I care about your arc. So I'm now I'm paying attention. I'm way off base with this. Look at your guys' faces. Mm. Oh my goodness!
You're just sitting there. You're invested.
I'm invested. Strike first. Strike hard. Fast. What is it?
Hard.
Strike first. Strike hard. No mercy.
There you go. What do you think? Where are you? Where's your head at this point in the series?
Listen. I'll always love Daniel. That's part of my childhood. The character. But you know, for this, I'm Johnny. But yeah, I see both sides. That's why I think it's brilliant. I see both sides.
Is it any surprise that we're wearing ties as headbands on this side of the table? I mean, come on.
Yeah, we're Team Johnny. I mean, you know, we really should be in the Cobra Kai. And
yeah.
We could have them in Miyagi.
The sleeveless baggy.
Miyagi-Do.
Oh, my God. That's what we should have worn. Maybe for the finale, we'll all come in and full undress up. Yeah, we'll see.
You know what?
Yeah, maybe.
I like that.
Yeah,
it's a good idea.
What do you think? That. What side are you on? I felt like you were so surprised when I was saying that.
Ooh. It's hard. It's hard. I think, like, for me, for the majority of the series, I'm Johnny's side because you're seeing him trying to redeem himself, you know, trying in his own weird way help these kids gain confidence. So I don't know. I think I'm on Johnny. And for the most part, I mean, completely just, like, understandable. But up until now, like, Daniel's really only just tried to get the dojo taken care of, like shut down,
right?
Rightfully so. But
yeah, I mean, he's definitely got, we talked about the PTSD a little bit. He's freaked out. He wants nothing. He thinks Cobra Kai is a pox, does not deserve to be in the valley, the all valley. He wants nothing to do with Cobra Kai. He thinks it's the villain. So in fact, when he finds out that that Sam is he's like, I want you to have nothing to do with any of these Cobra Kai guys. She's like, well, do you think they're all bad, Dad? What do you think? Could they be good? What do you think? Like, yeah, so he's full on, like, that guy's a villain.
Which I'm not surprised for his perception.
Of course.
From his traumas, from his past, I'm not at all surprised. And the philosophy of Cobra Kai is still strike hard, strike fast.
Yeah.
So on the surface, it appears as though this is your mom's Cobra Kai.
But he's also like such a square that he's like, I'm sure Cobra Kai is the same that it was 34 years ago, even though I haven't seen anybody or heard a word from him.
But Ben, you still have the logo. You have strike hard, strike fast.
Yeah.
So what would indicate otherwise that there's been any arc or change? You know, where's Johnny shown him from his perspective?
Right. Because he kind of gave him the benefit of the doubt when he first saw him. He fixed his car for free.
Yeah, right. And it was like he felt, you could see it was like he was very gracious in victory, as I always like to say. But, you know, from Daniel's perspective, and then add the fact that he's got charges, in his, from post-traumatic stress disorder, I get it.
Yep.
Get why this really freaks him out.
Yeah.
You know, for me, it's interesting. Now that, like, we're kind of talking about it and thinking about it, it's starting to, like, relate in my brain of, like, an old company that I used to work at. And I hate everything about that company, everything associated with. Doesn't matter who the new people are coming in or what's going on with it in terms mm-hmm. of the news and the press. I hated my experience there so much
right.
that it's it feels like the same thing. It's just yeah. anything, just like the experience that he had with Cobra Kai. I mean, in Cobra, Karate Kid 1, Karate Kid 3.
Yeah.
So it's, yeah. So like, it's just, yeah, it's just like that thing that just won't go away. It doesn't matter. I mean, I'm sure his daughter could buy the Cobra Kai name and start running. He'd be like, no, right. Cobra Kai.
Well, I think one really interesting thing, right, is that you think about your preferences in life, and we're all very busy, right? We all have lives. You know, you work a job, you have your relationships. So imagine you eat a food that you really, really hated, made you sick once when you were in your teens. 20 years later, yeah. you have that memory. You're never going to eat that food again. And you don't have time to test it out and try it out. He doesn't have time to see if Cobra Kai is good or bad. He has a definitive opinion that he feels strong about that makes him feel good about himself to hate Cobra Kai. So to this point, there would be no other reason in his life or time in his life to even feel a different way.
Cobra Kai is his tequila.
Yes. He won't do it.
Right. Everyone had that, like, sick, well, many people have had
he gets sick.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
And one, never yeah. go back.
That was right? Jack Daniels for me in high school.
Goldschlager.
Yeah, it was a bad experience.
Goldschlager. Oh, wait. Jägermeister.
Yeah, there you go.
Ooh.
Yeah. Sorry. So, but yeah, so he wants, he's like, you know, stay away from these Cobra Kai guys. And she's like, you know, this Miguel kid, she's thinking, I think he's, you know, she's like, he can't be all bad. Come on. He's a nice kid, right? He saved me. He beat all these bullies up.
Well, what I think is interesting, too, is at this point, Aisha is pretty much second in command at this dojo.
Yeah.
And there's no mention of, you know, by Sam to Daniel, like, well, Aisha's in it. And Daniel thinks very highly of Aisha.
Right.
So I wonder if he knew that at that point, how his perception would change.
Right. Right, right, right. So.
Let's go over to Cobra Kai.
Yeah.
And Johnny's first meeting with those kids, I would think, would totally horrify Daniel.
Oh, man.
Right? Yes. Because he goes at them hard. And particularly Eli, he just hammers the kid.
Yeah.
And Eli walks out. And Dimitri, of course, no surprise to me, walks out like, hey, I'm paying you money and you're... I'm not being paid to be yelled at.
Right.
You know, so you can see where Daniel, I think if he saw that, again, it would trigger.
Right.
You know, so you know, Miguel, who I love how Miguel is mentoring him back a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, Johnny back, where he says, you know, come on, like, you know, these people are paying us money. We got to, you know, we got to, like, change the game. And although he doesn't apologize on day two, he explains his side of it, his perspective, which is something effective, like, guys, life's tough.
Right.
And I'm here to prepare you for this. And the kind of silver lining is Eli coming in as Hawk. So it kind of, where millennials and Gen Z are helicopter parented, and it's all about avoiding pain at all costs. This old school kind of philosophy of like, hey, life's tough. I need to prepare you for the toughness. It works.
Yeah, I have this memory of when I was a teenager. I worked for Nordstrom, right? I was leaving Seattle. I was 21 years old. And the last 6 months of my job was a total just like degenerate. I didn't work hard. I stopped cleaning. I was showing up late. I was leaving early. Like I was a kid. I had just turned 21 and I was ready to go. And so for the last few months, you know, I just was totally dicking off. And I remember the manager, when she talked to me, each time she would talk to me, she would have these enormously kid gloves, like, well, I just want to give you every opportunity to do a good job here. You know, we are supportive of you and any concerns or problems. You
oh
know,
my God.
You need to talk to someone. You can't, right? It's like so new generation. Oh my God. Looking back, and I'm like, I would have just fired me. It's like, you're not doing your job. Get someone else. Like, you're not doing a good job. I don't need to give you this many chances. And that's just kind of the difference in philosophy is that's so much the workplace, anywhere, you train somewhere, you have a teacher. No one's allowed to just have like that tough love approach. We all saw Whiplash, right?
Yeah, of course.
I mean, it's that classic. It's like, what's going to get you the better result? I don't know. Kreese thought it was one way.
You know, it's funny. There's all multiple ways to coach. There's multiple, you know, ways to teach. And yeah, you can get the results by being tough. But then, you know, there's other people who get it through positivity as well.
Right.
You know, Miyagi got it through positivity. Kreese got it his way. We're seeing with these characters, with Johnny and Daniel, they're very gray.
Right.
They're not black and white.
I think when Eli comes back as Hawk is like one of the weird, rare moments where we see what Cobra Kai is about and how it does instill this, in a weird way, it does instill the sense of confidence. Like, I'm coming back bigger and better, which...
And badder.
And badder. Yeah. But that's, Daniel doesn't see that, but we kind of see, like, okay, so there are benefits.
Well, Daniel's not privy to the flashback of Johnny's childhood. He's not privy to the fact that Johnny felt a lot like Eli at one time.
Yep.
And he sought out strong male leadership and guidance. And, you know, we see that in the flashback.
You guys don't get it because I was you.
Yeah.
Yeah, because there's a great line where Miguel says, you've never been us. You don't know what it's like to be us. He's like, well, you're wrong about that.
Right.
Let me show you this flashback. You know? So.
And that's, you know, when he opens up to Miguel, says, hey, you know, like, I had this girl, Allie. He even opens up about his romantic life.
This is one of the key scenes in the whole show, I think, actually. Yeah. The scene you're talking about. Mm-hmm. Because it's truly one of the scenes that informs why this series happened. It's that the whole concept of, in his mind, that he was right, and LaRusso came to town and stole his girl, and the way he's telling the story, he sucker punched me, and then he stole my girl. And it's like, watching that movie in 84, it's not what you watched, but watching it now, and you see these characters, like, I guess I could see how this hot-headed Italian kid punches in the face.
That's right, and perspective. And how many people, how many times you guys in life that somebody has a skewed perspective, and they're actually not lying, it's what they believe, and then now multiply times 30 years of failure. And then alcoholism is proven to, or alcohol is proven to stunt your growth and put you, it's a depressant, it's put you in a dark place. So I've seen many times where people paint a picture in their brain that, you know, isn't 100% accurate, but they believe it is. And that picture gets darker and darker and more solidified as the years go on. And who, by the way, who loves him and is healthy enough in his life to go, Johnny, come on, dude, it's not how it is. It was 4-on-1. There's no one there saying that to him, right? The guy at the bar stool next year is always just agreeing with you and going, oh, yeah, you got fucked. Well, I got fucked over too in life. So, yeah, you can see it. But you also hear how much he really loved Allie.
Well, how many times do you retell a story before the story you're telling just becomes what happened? You know what I'm saying? That's kind of, it's like, that's even happened to me, not even in a nefarious way. It's just like memories you have from when 20 years ago and you try to remember them and you have a better memory of the story that's been told than what actually happened anymore.
Well, Tony Robbins, you know, if you ever attended seminars, he always says, you guys, a lot of you have to divorce yourself from your story. Many of us have a story, you know, for me, my film was stolen, my first film I made, and that became my story. Oh, if only my film hadn't gotten stolen.
Oh, right.
Huh. You know, if only my wife hadn't left me. If only he hadn't taken away Allie. If only Danny Russo didn't come into my life, I would be with Allie and I'd be owning a dealership or whatever. And so we marry these stories. And Tony Robbins' big thing is you got to divorce yourself from that story because you're first of all, the story's not true. And second of all, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy because you're making it true. So I thought it was really accurate.
Yeah, I think it's really, really good. So you mentioned Hawk and Eli in this sort of day two. You know, Miguel's like, what are you doing? You can't talk to these kids this way if you want to have students. You have to be, you know, treat them with a little more respect. And he's, you guys are all pussies. Whatever.
I feel like Johnny has this weird, like, it's just tough love, deal with it mentality.
Well, again, this is the generation.
And it's such a wonderful character. Nice shirt. I'm kidding. It sucks. Like,
different world, guys.
I love it.
The world I came up in.
But when Hawk comes back, because he's relentless, going after his face, you know, and it's just, it makes you feel uncomfortable when he's doing it.
Yeah, I felt bad.
Yeah, of course. But then when Hawk comes back, also the comedy of Hawk getting and then he's got the giant tattoo. Like, how old are you?
Yeah.
But so Hawk comes back, he's a total badass, and then, you know, he starts to be aggressive, you know, hit on babes. That's also another one of my favorite Johnny-isms, that he calls girls babes.
Yeah.
And he's like in his 50s or whatever, and he's just like, never let it go.
Yeah.
You drink Coors, you drive a Pontiac, you hit on babes, life's good. Yeah.
Drive a Firebird, let's be more specific.
A Firebird, yeah. That was a big car. I mean, that was, like in the 80s, like obviously he drives it in the first
movie. That was a quintessential cheese ball car.
Or you say cheese ball.
Yeah, like the Firebird, the Trans Am, I mean,
hanging at nightclubs and, you know, listen to whatever your local Kiss station is in your city, you know, that they were in the Firebird or the Trans Am or the Camaro.
Yeah, because, like, I mean, Smoking the Bandit was a Trans Am. And then Kit, Knight Riders Industry, too. Right. You know, that thing was, like, I think it was a Firebird.
It was.
Yeah.
It was. So, but
Pontiac.
But trust me, though, Rick, just to clarify, these guys were not watching Kit.
Right, right, no, yeah, right. We're not watching Knight Rider.
They're cranking their club music and they're driving that, yeah. and getting hot girls and laughing at people like us.
The coolest Hot Wheels was the Firebird always. When I was growing up, when I was like 7 or 8 years old, that was, you know, you have all your toy cars or whatever, and the Firebird was always the coolest looking one.
I tell you, when you know, I told you in early episodes, I went right to eBay and Craigslist and just started looking to say, I gotta have this car. This car is amazing. I have the 79 Trans Am.
I was just gonna say, yeah, what is your, so
I have the 79 Trans Am, the Smokey and the Bandit one that you mentioned. And, wow. And it's amazing.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Keep that car in immaculate shape.
Oh my God. Yeah. I saw a name drop last night. I was with the president of Warner Brothers, and yeah. He literally walked out and goes, oh my God, this is the Batmobile. And by the way, he's got his Porsches and this. And he's like, you know, like, this is unbelievable.
Yeah.
But now I'm greedy. I want the 80s one.
Yeah.
I can't help it.
That's funny. Those cars, it's such a time and a place.
Ugh.
Yeah, well, because then the other one, though, it's not from the 80s, but in Gone in 60 Seconds, he's trying to get the Shelby GTO, right? The
badass.
Yeah,
that's going to be going on that.
Mustang.
Yeah, that's the other one that I feel like always comes to mind when I think of cars that look like that. Mm-hmm. You know, those muscle cars.
66.
Yeah, so, but anyway, getting back to the series here for a second. So Hawk comes back. He's a total badass now. It's starting to really instill this idea that maybe Johnny's on to something. Maybe Cobra Kai wasn't all bad. Maybe our kid Miguel is actually going to be kind of the good guy, and we were wrong. And
or maybe Russo... maybe Cobra Kai 2.0 can work.
Can work.
Yeah, the branding is starting to work.
Right, because Kreese, we don't even know his... I mean, we know he's Vietnam. Like, we think of the demons and that haunted that guy to create Kreese, who
created... There's true PTSD there, right? Yeah.
Who created this truly dark place, but who knows? In his brain, good intentions. But where we know Johnny, and I think with great writing, we... believe he had probably had a very sweet mother who loved him. I think that there's that half of him in there, and that's why I feel like it is Cobra Kai 2.0,
right?
Where he's going to be more patient with the misfits, but just applying enough of that tough love, which is lost on this generation. In the short run, it's working.
Well, so the next thing that happens is that he finds out that Cobra Kai, because of the old generation, has been banned from the All Valley tournament. Sees a poster or sees an ad in a magazine. I love this is one of my favorite moments when he's looking through that magazine. He's like, $50 for nunchucks. Get out of here.
I was like, awesome. Like $450 or something. Yes. Yeah. It was like hundreds.
So awesome.
I was dying laughing.
And listen, little just for you geeks, the ad was almost identical to the original ad.
Okay.
That was in Karate Kid.
So I looked. Actually, like, I went back and looked just recently. And so yeah, the new ad's purple. It's okay. Purple and has a different date on it, whereas the old one was red.
Got it.
So cool. But and the date's different. But yeah, like, literally the similarities are
so
just...
cool.
Yeah. I love that the writers, they took the series. They really did treat it like Star Wars. Every little niche, every bit of it was important to them in that way.
And Daniel sold the millennial parent, meaning the helicopter parent.
Right.
Who's now, with his money and his power, he's micromanaging this. And he's like, nope, keep them out. Like, we're going to keep it.
Right.
You know,
the good old boys club. We just want all the people that treat me as a champion. I don't want any opposition.
Yeah,
right.
Kind of. Like, Daniel was very against it, but I felt, how could you not take it into consideration after the type of speech Johnny gives to get Cobra Kai back in?
Well, the speech that he gives is really important. And again, I think there's a couple beats that this show hits that when I was watching, where I was like, this is why this is good. This is why this content is better than just a reboot or just a nostalgia train. Like, they're treating these characters like, and they're really fleshing them out. And that speech that he gives about, I'm giving these kids a place, right? I'm teaching them something, I'm helping them, and they're helping me. Right, that was such a powerful moment, because you realize that actually, like, he is finally coming to terms with how broken he is, his demons. He's finally facing them, and he's just actualizing it in a speech out loud. He's realizing it in that moment that's really what's happening, is that it's helping turn his life around. And then, of course, Macho's like, nope, sorry. Let me enjoy my Nespresso, bro.
And significant as well is a mention of a John Kreese, who we know, but then the mention of Terry Silver as well. Mm. And Johnny says Kreese is dead, which is interesting. Is he symbolically mean he's dead to me? Or does he believe he's dead? We don't know. But then we never saw Johnny meet Terry Silver. And he does say, I don't know him.
Yeah.
And I think it's, but again, that's a Karate Kid 3 reference. Kudos to the creators and the writers of Cobra Kai for respecting the history. And I am sure down the road we see Terry Crews, I am sure. He's a great actor.
Terry Silver.
Terry Silver, excuse me. Sorry.
And then Sorry. how about Mike Barnes, the protege from that. From Karate Kid 3.
Oh, by the way, he's been at AfterBuzz. Please,
mm-hmm. Sean Cannon.
It might be a nice segue into what you can see. But we had him here at AfterBuzz, did a long form interview with him. I think you guys, whatever works is going to be used. So absolutely, you could see him. And you know, maybe he's broken down and he's not the expert. But I wouldn't be surprised if mention or like, why not? Why wouldn't you?
I believe he's expressed interest in wanting to be in it.
I think all bets are off. I think. The
success of this one's going to spur everybody to get involved.
Like I was telling you guys, you know, I've talked to Tamla Tamita, who was in Karate Kid 2. She's open to an idea of Kumiko, the character, coming back. Yeah. And she talked about the actor that played Chosen. You know, she's like, they've got to come to Okinawa, right? The birthplace of karate.
Yeah, I mean, you know, again, you think so few things work today because we have such a glut of content that where this is working and has put YouTube right on the map, you know, why wouldn't you want to do 7, 8, 9, 10 seasons of this? You know, so that, yeah, I think it'll all get used up.
In Karate Kid canon, just because I mentioned Rick, you're probably the biggest fan I know. I definitely have seen one a bunch of times, and I've seen two before. 3 and 4 have changed the channel on cable a lot of times.
Come on, you think crane crap's going
to
work?
Well, so my question to you guys is, in the common canon of Karate Kid, does it go in order 1, 2, 3, 4 in terms of quality? Like, just sort of there's a common understanding? Like, 1's the best, obviously.
Yeah. I think so.
Yes.
Yeah. Just gets worse as they go?
Yes.
Interesting.
Okay. I mean, but 2 is not even worse. It's 2, I wouldn't even say 2 is worse. I would
just
say
less famous.
I'd say like they're even.
It's just say like 1 is a classic.
Right.
That's like the biggest thing. It's just 1 is a classic. 2 is equally as good.
I'm surprised. I think 2 is a drop down. Not really. But I love you guys saying that.
It's because the reason 1 is so good is because it's the phenomenon. Like, this was the 80s.
Yeah.
Once that movie opened, karate dojos were being opened everywhere. Nobody ever understood the concept of like this whole wax on, wax off.
Right,
you know, the crane kick. Like, the writer really couldn't incorporate a lot of that funny stuff that he did in 1 into, or we were already privy to, like that type of teaching already. So that's why Karate 1 is probably just, it's like, I had this conversation the other day. It's like watching Deadpool and Deadpool 2.
Sure.
Right. Deadpool 1 is really good because like you hadn't seen that style before. And then in Deadpool 2, it kind of felt like, okay, yeah, we've seen it. So same thing with like Karate 1 and 2 is that all those little techniques.
Yeah.
Those little tricks and stuff. Yeah, we'd never seen it before, so it was really cool to see it. In 2, he used it a little bit less, but and that's why Kevin, I would say like how you guys regard Karate Kid 1 as a classic. That's probably true.
It's probably similar too to honestly Rocky 2, because Rocky 2 is a great movie. It's just not iconic.
But many critics believe Rocky 2 was even
the better movie, right?
Right. Yeah. So and they said that about Superman 2 as well. But if you go to the other series, but listen, you guys, if you agree or you disagree, please let us know. Now, if you're listening to us, you can go to iTunes. Give us a 5-star rating, of course, whether you agree or disagree. And then leave your comments there. It really helps us guys as a show. And we will read and respond to those comments on the show and via Twitter. And then if you are watching us on YouTube, please leave those comments, whether you agree or disagree there, or agree or disagree with anything we're saying. And if you're over at YouTube, do us a favor and subscribe to our channel. We have several different channels here at AfterBuzz. This is on AfterBuzz TV Drama. But if you subscribe to that, you'll help us a ton. And if you like our other channels, which we have AfterBuzz TV Reality, we have AfterBuzz TV Sci-Fi, we have AfterBuzz TV Wrestling. Yeah, if you like those things, go check them out and please subscribe. And if you do subscribe, let us know. Okay, you can tweet at any of us or you can let us know in the comments. And I promise we'll give you a shout out. And it just helps us here. We put a lot of time and effort into the network. And every little bit we get from you guys helps. It's hard. Being the ESPN of TV talk means we have to do our best to cover every show. It's exhausting for us as hosts. It's exhausting for us as a network. So, and we don't never ask you guys for money. And we've resisted subscriptions for years, and we will continue to do that. I mean, paid subscriptions. So please, if you can subscribe to our YouTube channels and rate and comment on iTunes and leave us those comments, we would super, super duper appreciate it.
Yeah, and obviously it groups together. If you like drama, you'll get more drama recommendations, but notifications are optional, so don't even worry about it. If you just want to support AfterBuzz, that's the way to do it. It's just click that button, and it helps us keep going. So
support the Cobra Kai dojo.
Yes, exactly, Cobra Kai. By the way, because I haven't mentioned this, and we've done 3 parts, I do this movie trivia competition called Schmodown. I play a villain. I get to be Cobra Kai. And
what a surprise.
Our last t-shirt that was released is literally the Cobra Kai logo, except it says Team Action. It was like they designed us a... So I am Cobra Kai in my own respective competitive league, just for the record.
Nothing but respect for that, Ben.
Yeah, yeah. Love it. Love playing a villain. So let's continue working through this story. So he does go and he presents this whole thing to the board. Now, at the same time this is happening, obviously there is this storyline where Miguel and Sam, they're hanging out. And so Miguel's on a date with Sam. It's not supposed to be a date. He takes the advice. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, again, I was just going to say, again, another instance where Cobra Kai methods and their philosophy is not all bad. The whole strike first, don't take no for an answer, and he does, and he gets to go on the date with the girl.
Yeah.
Although, and what it's a scary translation to strike first and don't take no for an answer when it comes to dating.
Yes, he at least clarifies himself. Yeah, when it gets physical. Yes,
of course, of course. Like, he full on says, like, if she's, it's no means no. So good for Johnny on that one. But another thing that I found funny is before they even go on their date, Johnny gives Miguel a suggestion on where to take her. And you think it's Johnny. You think it's going to be like something gross. Like, they're going to like go, I take my babes to Lover's Lane or something. But no, it's cute. It's like golf and stuff.
It's a throwback to the original movie again. Golf and stuff. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Which there's two of them. There's a golf and stuff in Ventura, and there's another one out there in the valley.
But the one in the one in the other one is the one that they use for both.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I love golf and stuff. I'm a big fan, actually. I'm a huge mini golf guy. Are you guys?
But yeah. Of course. But it's golf and stuff. It's not a franchise.
There's two of them.
There's two of them, but that doesn't mean it's
a franchise. Yeah, I just mean it's...
But I'm saying, what I love is when we have those kind of businesses that remain intact. Beautiful. You know, because arcades have gone away. Right. It's tough. So those
businesses... The karate dojos have gone away.
They have, you know, but I love the fact, even I'm a fan of the old Bad News Bears, and so many of those locations now are gone. There's an arcade in that. But I love that the golf and stuff...
Still there.
Same thing, where Allie and Daniel went. Very cool.
So probably if I'm going to rank my fist pump moments in the show, I have like four or five that are my favorites. And the moment that he comes back from the date and he comes back from the board meeting and he's like, I'm the man. He's like, I'm the man. He's like, you're the man too. And they're like having the bro moment.
It's so great.
It's so cute.
I was so excited. It was like, seriously, it might've been the best moment in the whole show. Honestly, that one interaction is just like, this is why this show is great. This is why this works. Cause you guys got it. This doesn't even have Ralph Macchio and I'm so in. He's not even in the scene.
And you know what was cool too with the golf and stuff is the fact that they even shot it parallel.
Yeah.
To the original, time. You know, same with the shots, the playing hockey together. I just want to throw that out. But yes, I felt the same way. I'm like, this is great. This is the father and son. This is Johnny being the father he was never able to be.
Yep.
He's doing what Kreese failed at. And Miguel is getting the father he never had.
Right.
And I was like, all is well in Cobra Kai.
And you still don't see that heel turn.
I know.
It only makes you like him even more as the protagonist.
Yeah. And
if we all agree it is a heel turn.
I don't know if it is. We will, though this will be addressed some probably in part three, but mostly in part four, I'm assuming, because it's where we really start to see it. But it is important to note that you mentioned the father-son thing. And at the same time, we have an entire Robbie storyline that's happening with Daniel that we're going to have to get to.
Before you get to that, though, I just did want to point out that I will say this, that this episode does start my frustration with Miguel, though, in reference to what's going to happen later.
Because?
Because going back to the whole Johnny and Allie thing and Johnny claiming Daniel steals his girl and he tells him that story, I think it instills a sense of paranoia in Miguel because of his crush and his date with Sam. And so this is where my frustration starts with him, because I'm like, no, don't think it's exactly going to happen to you. Just, you know, be you, be the golf and stuff you.
Yeah, what's crazy too, that like, you know, when Johnny talks about it, he's like, LaRussos are all the same. They're bad people. And it's just like, the LaRussos are bad people? Like, what? Your demented reality? Come on, the Cobra Kai's are evil. The LaRussos are good people.
But again, in his perspective, he doesn't, in his brain, there's no Johnny LaRusso who moves to Reseda, and he's with Allie.
Yeah.
And all is well, and he's very successful, and he wins that tournament, and it's a whole different world.
How funny is it that in the 80s, that the three stars, the three child stars of this movie, the one that actually went on to be like really famous and have a huge career was the female love interest, and the two male leads basically just completely fell off the map, almost entirely. Like, they compared to Elizabeth Shue, who was like in Oscar-winning movies and had like a major career.
You're right, but... Out of the names, do we think Elizabeth Shue is a more known name than Ralph Macchio?
At one time in the 90s, but for
no.
sure.
No, I mean no.
No, definitely not. But so that's, again, that's the unfair male-to-female paradigm in the history of Hollywood. 30 years True. Ages a male versus a female in people's eyes in such a different way.
True.
It's really hard. But continuing this Robbie storyline. So Robbie seeks out a job at LaRusso Auto because he's like, I'm going to... It all happened just because he saw Miguel hugging his dad and taking the gi. He didn't even talk to him. He saw from a distance, and that was all he needed to see.
Right.
You know?
To be triggered and to go, okay, I'll show you, Dad. I'm going to go work for you.
Lies on his resume.
Yeah. He's good.
To get the job.
Yeah. And then gets seriously messed with by Louis. Just messed with to the core. Ugh. Starts the car. Yeah.
You know, it's interesting, you know, that Daniel in the first one mentions an Uncle Louis.
Yeah, right, right,
so
right.
So this is clearly the spawn of Uncle Louis.
Mm-hmm. I think this is like... Robbie actually trying to do something right, because if this really was just about him getting back to his dad, he could have easily, like, in the first day of him working there, been like, hey dad, look at my shirt, or something like that, easily spiral. But I think it was always a little bit more for Robbie, especially when he got
you know
there.
What it could be subconscious, you know, on the conscious level I'm gonna get revenge on dad, but on the subconscious level I'm really seeking male guidance. I'm seeking a positive, real male role model.
Yeah, right. And he's...
And Dad, you're not giving it to me, so you know what? This guy looks, he owns a dealership, he's got, you know, like...
Because he comes in and he hustles right away. You know? And it's the karate that sells him. But it happens pretty fast, because it's like day one, he's hustled, he's worked really hard, he's this go-getter kid, you know, gets in the Porsche, almost leaves, and then it's when he goes to deliver those sales reports, right? That he's like, all right, maybe I'm in on this.
I love how the LaRusses, though, you know, Daniel especially, has this sweet and generous heart.
Yeah, right.
Where he wants to mentor him. I think that's really cool. Like, he didn't forget where he came from.
Completely.
He didn't get spoiled by Miyagi, get handed all these cars, all this property, then become a dealership and be like, yeah, peace out. I don't have to give back. I love that.
Yeah, I also think it's sweet that Robbie wants to learn. Because you can see throughout the series, Daniel so desperately wants someone to... like do karate with, like, right. He wants to get his daughter back in the dojo. He kind of completely gives up on his son.
You don't think Lil Anthony? No.
Definitely not. He's like, absolutely not. I think it means a lot to Daniel too that Robbie is genuinely interested in learning.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, big time. And Robbie's a very capable student very quickly.
It's funny, you know, I used to work with special ed students, and they were all at risk, you know. So I mean, special ed, it wasn't so much mental illness or things like that. It was more, they were violent, they had criminal past, whatever. But I will tell you, with very few exceptions, I mean, very few that were just sociopaths, and that was maybe 5%. The rest of them so badly wanted to be fathered, so badly were just thirsty for it. And when you saw them, you took the time to see them, they would respond. And I always had great results because nobody was seeing them. Everyone was seeing them as burdens, as criminals, you know. So I love this writing. I totally buy that this kid who is a super punk, but when he gets seen and he finally gets positive reinforcement in his life, then he's like, wow, I want to do more.
Yeah. And also, you know, his friends are totally believable. High school, you know, dirt bags, right? Like, that's always wanting to get into it, steal some stuff.
Yep.
And so very quickly after he starts training and he's getting all these methods, I mean, they go out in the woods, they do all of it, right? Like, the whole bit. He stands up to his friends, it's a big turning point for his character on the show. But what I loved about it was that it felt very, very Ralph Macchio in Karate Kid. It's clever. Yeah. He's fighting and he's being capable, but he kind of backs up into the camera and he catches him. And it's like, not just brute force, it's like using his wits. It's like being a little more defensive. You know, he's strong, he's good enough to fight him off, but more importantly, he's good enough to get him on camera. And he's like, now I use my brain and my balance to get rid of these guys.
Which is Miyagi-Do karate.
Yeah. Yeah, which is right? Awesome.
Always defense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. That's pretty great. Yeah. So I love that. So then the other thing that we haven't talked about is when Robbie comes over to see Daniel and he actually meets Allie. So, not Allie.
Samantha.
Yes,
Samantha.
He meets Samantha. And this is obviously a big turning point in this relationship, because it's pretty clear from the second that he sees her, you know, he runs into the wind chimes. He's into her. And she's pretty into him. You know, I mean, he looks like Jonathan Taylor Thomas. What can we say? You know?
Maybe Samantha's the villain.
Yeah, maybe she's Jar Jar Binks. It seems like she's kind of into him.
Yeah, I think
she might not have been into him, but the way that Miguel acted definitely pushes her.
I mean, maybe not at that moment, but we know that, right? They're mm-hmm. kids, so something's gonna.
Yeah, as he says, you don't look at your brother that way. You know, that's the truth. That's the truth. So, but yeah, I love it. I love, you know, Robbie gets brought in right away, and he quickly becomes sort of like a part of the family. He's having dinner with them. You know, she gets grounded, and Robbie, or maybe is that's not this episode. Sorry, I jumped ahead. So Robbie becomes a part of the family. And so I want to talk a little bit about the training, because I think that's a whole big montage of him out in the woods and learning to do the one hand balance and the synchronized stuff and all that stuff. I thought it was interesting that they focused on a training montage basically once for about 10 minutes of an episode. And that was it. That's the only Robbie real training that we need to see to believe that he's a capable enough karate master to almost win the tournament, right?
Well, I feel like that's almost kind of, obviously Robbie kind of did it in from what we see a day, but I feel like that's also kind of the equivalent of how quickly Daniel had to get it figured out in the first movie.
Well, because one of the big things that the creators have said in interviews is that they basically shot a 5-hour movie and cut it up into 10 parts. They describe it that way.
Right.
So if this was a movie, you wouldn't have multiple training montages. You'd have one. That's how movies work. That's right. How fighting movies always work. You have that's the right. one training montage. So that's the one we get. Do you believe? So we compared, you know, the styles of Johnny and I'm getting tired. Johnny and Daniel. And Daniel.
Yeah.
How do we feel Miguel matches up against Robbie at this point when you're watching them train and you're watching them like physically?
I feel like it's one is Daniel's is more like ballet.
Yeah.
Then, you know, which is more in that philosophy of Miyagi-Do karate. I didn't know how I felt about the balancing on one hand, if that wasn't a gimmick that really would not pay off in terms of self-defense. Rick, you with training and stuff, what do you think?
But it's hard. It's hard to replicate like that crane kick. You know, even Karate Kid 2, like the little drum technique thing, I still don't understand how to do it. I still don't understand how that thing works. In 3, the whole use kata form, you know, that didn't work for me either. So it's like, they pretty much have set themselves up to fail. Even like what Jaden Smith did in the Kung Fu Kid, not Karate Kid remake.
Thank you.
You know, same thing. It's like that weird kick thing. I was like, what is that? I was like, it doesn't make any sense. So, I didn't buy it, and I knew that was something that I was looking forward to.
Plus, you know,
trying to see what they were going to use.
And what makes it hard for me is that Johnny can really pull off these moves. Ralph Macchio is not going to be able to balance himself on one hand.
Right.
Yeah.
So that made it harder for me too.
Yeah, that was
fun. Veronica, what do you think?
I don't know. I feel like the one-handed kick was just kind of, yeah, would you really need that in a competition kind of thing? I felt like that was more of a setup for the one big move, just like how the first movie had the one big move that they get to accomplish.
But do you buy that move? That was my problem, yeah.
No.
But I love the montage. Did I say this was the greatest TV series ever made?
Ever. You did.
Ever.
You did.
Streaming and TV.
I love the montage as well.
I think it's for the Emmys.
I think it worked well. So the last couple things to talk about on that side of things. We get a family dinner with Daniel LaRusso's mom coming to town.
Mom is back,
which is fun. Oh, that's awesome.
And she's feisty. And it's like, where's Louis? He's not here. And he's like, day's great. Louis's not even here for dinner. I love it.
Oh, boy.
And so now we find out where Louis is with these biker morons.
By the way, how many of us have the meathead family that family members who think they're doing well but totally screwing up our lives?
I actually have avoided that one. I don't. What do you guys? Do you? You?
I'm Italian, so we. Okay, yeah, 100%. Tons of them. Tons of them. They grow them.
Yeah.
So I got it.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah,
I got it.
I've never.
And then you feel that need to, you know, take care of him, and the mother's pressuring him.
Yeah. Right.
You got to take care of your cousin. That's your cousin. Family first.
I think what made that scene when Louis goes to, you know, mess up the car, I think what makes that scene even worse is, like, just before that, he's trying so hard to write this heartfelt letter to his son.
Right.
And it's like, phew, look at this, like, stuff he has to deal with.
Right.
Which wasn't warranted. Like, that was Louis's weird old perception of, like, yeah, this kid is totally messing with my cousin. I need to do something about it.
That's with the family. And, you know, when you're a Louis, you know, Daniel's done so much for him. You can tell, probably financially, he's right. carried him. And this is what I can do. Like, I can kick ass for the family. And sure enough, with his two goons.
Yep.
Another scene I loved.
Yeah. Oh, I loved watching Johnny this point, because at this point when he end, this is I think the end of the eighth episode is when that happens. So you see him fighting, and like you're like, oh, not only do I buy in all the way on this guy now, not only is he like, you feel like he's balanced, he's getting his life together, he started to drink orange juice, he's avoided the banquet beer. You're like, he's soberly gonna kick these guys' ass, and he's gonna handle them. They've all got bats. You're like, this is gonna be so sweet. And it is. It's great. Except then the car blows up, and then obviously. But he's so mad, it's like, it's totally Roadhouse. It's totally Wesley! It is Wesley Russo! You know, that's great. So.
I think it's also a point where you think, okay, he's finally had enough. Like, you think, okay, this is the moment that's gonna set him over the edge to wanna fight Daniel.
Right.
Basically. Because, like, at the beginning, it was like, Johnny really hated Daniel. Daniel kind of gave him a slap on, like, a pat on the back. And then it turned into, like, Daniel really trying to sabotage him. And Johnny just kind of being like, eh, I'm just going to work my way through it. This was the moment where I felt like, okay, all bets are off. I am going to destroy you.
This was for me.
And they were big guys, too, which was awesome.
Yeah, it's great.
So cool.
This was for me the moment where, so I'm watching, I finished this episode. And I'm like, oh, I have to meet somebody for lunch in 20 minutes. And I'm like,
right, the worst.
I was like, do I cancel lunch? I was like, I need to watch this. I have to see what happens.
Have to.
I'm like, ah, God. So I like go to lunch. And I'm like, quickly, like, can you check, please? Where are you going? I just got to pick something at home.
Really. Rick, I got to pick up some biker guys.
Rick, did you do one sitting for all 10?
Yes.
Same with me. Veronica?
Yep.
There might have been a bathroom break or two in there.
Of course, but what a compliment to a series.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right?
And I love the length so much. It was just perfect.
Not only the fact that it was 10 episodes, but the fact that they were like half an hour, I felt like was just perfect enough. Like if they had tried to stretch it to an hour, I felt like it would have been too convoluted.
Sometimes, I mean, even the shows that I think are best, like the shows I really, really love, when they're 45 to an hour, it sometimes is taxing. Sometimes.
I mean, Billions, we do the show here, it's an hour, and when you deal with these pay cable channels, you don't have commercial breaks, so you're exhausted. You're tired even watching, let alone hosting. But I feel Entourage and Silicon Valley, this, 30 minutes, 22 minutes, just nice, 30 minutes, you know?
Yeah, yeah. It's what television used to be like before there was premium television,
mm-hmm.
all of it. So, but yeah, he wrecks the car, and he's like, I got to go find LaRusso, and it's a big moment, and I didn't want to go to lunch. I wanted to watch it.
Yeah, well, you know, and this is where, you know, once again, the stakes are going to get higher and higher to get our guys, our protagonists, dual protagonists together.
Because now we don't really know. At this point, at the end of this portion of the show, and we will come back for part four, guys, to do the real finale, to talk the last couple episodes with you. But to, you know, this point in the show, you're really like, okay, I think I'm on Miguel's side. I think I'm with Johnny, but I don't know. You're like, I Daniel's pretty great. And then you're like, oh, they wreck his car, so he's totally in the right. And, you know, it's like, I think it's really well balanced at this point in the show.
I was going to say, but how do you feel about Robbie? Like, are you on Robbie's side?
At this point, I feel like Robbie, you're like,
Rick Hahn.
No.
For iTunes listeners, he's shaking his head.
I'm not, because I don't think his intentions are true.
Right.
Like the way that he weaseled himself.
At this point.
Yeah, at this point, I don't think his intentions are true. So that's why, like, mm-hmm. now he's still a little bad little dude to me.
I'm with Rick. Yep.
Bad Jonathan Taylor Thomas?
Yeah.
Oh, Ryder Strong, I'm telling you.
I can tell he's arcing. He's getting there, but he's not quite there yet. He could go anyway.
Yeah.
So I'm with you. You guys, special segment tonight before we leave. This is another crazy internet thing, but can we discuss Demon Sorcerer Miyagi and the theory behind Demon Sorcerer Miyagi?
Can you explain it to me?
Well... when Miyagi in the first Karate Kid, when Daniel said, you know, I'm out, can't walk, my knee's blown out, when he got the illegal kick, Miyagi, you see him rub mm-hmm. his hands together, and he cracks the knee or whatever, and Daniel's able to walk and move around and, of course, win the tournament. The theory is that it was actually magic powers he gave him, and this is why... Daniel is able to, you know, beat all these other guys in the future movies who are far superior to him. Just a theory. And so you guys haven't heard of this? Rick, you must have heard
this. The theory is based entirely on the fact that Ralph Macchio is this shrimp.
Can somebody look this up, please?
Demons.
So you guys are going to think I'm crazy. It's the Demon Sorcerer Miyagi theory, and maybe it can be explained better. But How am I like 90 years old and I know about this and you guys don't? I've you guys are the ones who start this stuff.
Yeah, as far as all of the factoids, I was on board with pretty much all of them. The Demon Sorcerer one, I thought you were going to say something about the Necromancer costume worn by Dimitri in an earlier episode and how that related to Miyagi. That's where I thought you were going. And I was
can you speak to that while we're looking this up?
That was literally what I thought. I thought you were going to tell me something like that people thought that Miyagi was a necromancer or somehow, and that maybe Dimitri's costume is reference to that. I was literally just like extrapolating off of.
Okay, and did you believe that?
No, I mean, I have no reason to.
Interesting. What do we have, Rick?
No, it just goes.
See, like, I would go along with it just because it's fun.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's absurd that he's able to. He's like this little guy. It's absurd that he's able to beat Johnny, and then also, of course, without putting any weight on or seemingly getting any better karate as the movies go on.
It just keeps refocusing on the fact of like the perception of how Johnny's not the real bad guy. Daniel is.
Was Miyagi a demon sorcerer?
I would almost feel like Miyagi's more of a
Time Magazine asks, was Miyagi a demon sorcerer?
Time Magazine, right? It's a reputable publication, can be found on newsstands everywhere.
I think I was reading somewhere that they were like Miyagi's almost kind of more like a Yoda in the way that he's his lessons and how he speaks.
So in a new video, YouTube user Matthew Turner argues that you've been interpreting one of the best high school movies of all time totally wrong. It's Daniel and his supposed nemesis, Johnny, who's the real force of evil here.
So it just goes back to that conversation that we had.
And as for Mr. Miyagi, well, he's actually a demon sorcerer who gives people special powers. See if you're convinced with the clip above. And so I guess you can check this out on YouTube.
I feel like it was more of a comment than it was a full-fledged theory.
Well, I'll make a promise to you, the listeners and the watchers. We will watch this video, and we will have comments on it for part four, that if there is, in fact, credence to the fact that Miyagi was a demon sorcerer, we will do our research, and we will share that with you.
Well, because, by the way, you guys tell us if he was a demon sorcerer.
Yeah, are you aware of this theory?
I don't believe he is, but you know what? Go to our comments on YouTube and let us know, or our comments on iTunes.
Yes.
Let us know.
Guys, that is going to wrap up part three of our Cobra Kai after show here on AfterBuzz. We're about to get the finale. We can't wait. We have part four coming up. Thank you so much for watching. Thank you so much for listening. Beautiful, wonderful panel. Where can the folks find you?
You can find me You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at @itsmeveronica_V.
Hey, guys, and I'm Rick Hong. You can find me on all social media at Rick Hong, RickHong. And next Sunday, July 1st, 5 p.m. I'll be covering GLOW for like the month of July, part of August. We'll have special guests like Mark Maron on. And every Sunday, 7 p.m., Netflix picks. You want to know what to watch on Netflix? Hit me up.
Kevin Undergaro, @Undergaro on all forms of social media. And I do want to say, you know, next week we wrap this up. And I think the biggest thing is going to be our predictions for season two.
Oh,
and we'll be trying to see what inside information we have. Out here at AfterBuzz News Department to deliver that to you as well. I am also on AfterBuzz TV's Bar Rescue After Show, AfterBuzz TV's Billions After Show, AfterBuzz TV's Jersey Shore After Show. We have our finale coming up on Thursday. The next time you see us on this show, though, I think the team's going to be in geese.
Yeah, maybe.
I think we got to go all in for this finale.
For the uniform.
I
might wear like a yukata, like a robe. You guys can find me at Ben Bateman Media on Twitter, on Instagram. You can find me every Wednesday on the Popcorn Talk Network, a sister network to AfterBuzz, doing Action Movie Anatomy at 2 p.m., one movie every single week. Tons of red carpets, and when Riverdale comes back, you guys will see me there. So thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. We'll see you guys. Part four coming up soon. See you guys.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
No mercy!
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.